All right, so. My microphone's died, so I'm going to have to use this handheld one. I can usually speak quite loudly, so without it, but as I said before, I don't want to be recorded like that. Let's now have a look at the process of implantation itself. And what I'd like to show you in this animation here, firstly, what we're looking at. So everything, including these green cells, is our conceptus, the blastocyst. And it's rolled along the wall of the uterus initially. It's receiving nutrients from the uterine glands that are secreting that rich nutrient substance to allow it to grow. And eventually, it slows and attaches to the wall. And it usually attaches and orientates itself such that the inner cell mass is aligned to the endometrial wall. At the time it stops and doesn't move from that point, we call that adplantation, that is attachment to the uterine epithelium. This layer of white cells here, this is the endometrial lining, the epithelium of the uterus. This would be the lining that's shed every menstrual cycle. And if this implantation begins too late, then this whole process will be shed in the following menstrual cycle. So these green cells here are our trophoectoderm around here. They're now trophoblasts. And the cells adjacent to the site of implantation have proliferated rapidly and form more than one layer of cells. Can I ask you to be quiet down the back there? And this multi-layered site just here, these cells were secreting enzymes to break down the zona pellucida before. Their secretions now are breaking down the extracellular matrix between the epithelium, which doesn't have an extracellular matrix, really the joints between the cells. And then in the stromal layer underlying it, it will break down the extracellular matrix. So in this way, the blastocyst invades the wall of the uterus. These cells that proliferate here divide very rapidly. They fuse together and form a multinucleated cellular mass that's secreting lots of these enzymes. And these particular cells we call syncytia trophoblast, a syncytia because it contains many nuclei. The trophoblast cells that remain close to our inner cell mass and around the outside here, these remain as individual cells with a single nucleus, so we call them cytotrophoblasts. So we're talking about the second week of development. As implantation occurs, over the second week, the entire conceptus implants completely within the wall, and the epithelium will heal back over the surface. There'll often be a coagulation plug at the site of implantation. But all development of our conceptus will occur fully implanted within the wall of the uterus, not within the uterine cavity. You'll notice that these are the syncytia trophoblasts here. As they're proliferating and moving into the stromal areas, they have spaces within them. As they invade the wall, they'll also be opening up maternal blood vessels, the capillaries within the wall, and accessing the nutrient from the maternal blood for the first time. So these spaces will fill with maternal blood, and these are called maternal lacunae, which means a blood-filled lake, or sorry, a lake, really. So they become a lake of blood adjacent to our conceptus. The other structures within the wall, as you'll already be aware, are the uterine glands, and the uterine glands will be opened up and also secreting directly into the surrounding space. So now the conceptus has access to everything it needs for growth and for disposing of its waste products as well. And it's protected in the wall. So let's go back to the early stage, and we've talked about the cells around the outside. What about the inner cell mass? Well, the inner cell mass, which used to be a mound of cells, has developed into two layers. One adjacent to the trophoblasts on the wall, shown in blue, and one closest to the blastocoel. In the second week of development, we call this stage of development of the embryo the bilaminar embryo, because it consists of two layers. The blue layer is the epiblast. The yellow layer, where the hand is the hyperblast. And as we run this animation forward a little bit, you'll see that within the epiblast layer, a cavity forms. And this cavity that forms on the epiblast side is the amniotic cavity. The first of the extra embryonic coelomes or cavities that form outside of the embryo. On the other side here, the hyperblast cells will line the blastocoel, and when they do line it, it's given the name of a primitive yolk sac. I don't talk a lot about it in the lectures because the hyperblast does not contribute to the embryo. All of the layers from the embryo will come from the epiblast and will occur during gastrulation, the next event. So as we run this forward a little bit more, you'll see that this consists of a hollow balloon, if you like, of epiblast cells. So the entire amnion is lined by epiblast cells. So this is the second week of development. We have changes both in the outer trophoblast layer and the inner cell mass. When implantation commences, these syncytia trophoblasts have a second role besides their enzymatic destruction of the matrix around the endometrial cells, and that is that they secrete a hormone, human chorionic gonadotropin, and this hormone gets back through the maternal bloodstream to the ovary, and in the ovary, remember our follicle that we had from 14 days ago? It's now going to receive this signal, and it's going to secrete high levels of maternal progesterone and maintain the lining of the uterus. So normally as the hormonal levels drop off, we have the shedding of the endometrial layer, the functional layer of the uterus. But in this case, it's going to be maintained by, back in the ovary, this large structure that's formed from our ovulating follicle, the corpus luteum. The inner granulosa cells and the fecal cells together make up this corpus luteum, and it's secreting into the maternal bloodstream, as I said, the maternal hormones. If implantation doesn't occur, we won't get that change in the corpus luteum, we won't maintain the lining, and we'll go through the normal menstrual cycle. So that's the process of implantation. I did mention to you that there is another abnormality that can occur, and here's an image of it just here. It's described as a hydatiform mole. This is where the implanting conceptus goes through the normal development of the trophoblast outer layers, but there is no embryonic development inside the conceptus. And basically what you're looking at is a tumour formed by the trophoblast cells proliferating within the uterus. Hydatiform mole is what it's called. And these cells, because they have the same function as the syncytia trophoblasts, the mother still would consider herself to be pregnant. She'd go through all of the normal hormonal changes. The corpus luteum would be maintained. It would only by carrying out an ultrasound that you wouldn't be able to detect the embryo being present and this abnormality occurring. Hydatiform mole is what it's called. So I've talked to you about the formation of the extra embryonic spaces. And when we look a little bit later in development, we see this amniotic space above the epiblast here. The blastocoel was around here and the hyperblast migrated around it. But during this time, the gastrulation process commences and it migrates cells down to form the lining of the true yolk sac, the endoderm, and later migrating cells form the mesoderm cells, forming the third layer. So here's our trilaminar embryo that's going to form here. I'll talk about that in the next section. But all the trophoblast cells are here, extending into the uterine glands, and here's our coagulation plug on the surface. The reason for showing you this diagram is to show you the three spaces that lie outside of the embryo. And we can identify them now as the amniotic space that will eventually enclose the embryo when it folds up. And that big rush of fluid at birth that rushes out of the uterus is all amniotic fluid. The space lying underneath the endoderm, the so-called yolk sac, lined by endoderm, it'll contribute to the gut, the bit that gets folded up into the embryo, but the bit that remains outside is extra-embryonic, and so it's the yolk space. And then this large cavity out here, which is the chorionic space, also lined by mesoderm. This is covered by mesoderm everywhere. Because it's outside the embryonic disc, we call it extra-embryonic mesoderm. So by stage 7 in development, this is the chorionic wall that we can see all the way around here. This is about 17 days. This small circle we see here is the yolk sac, and the embryonic disc is in this region just here, so it's attached to the wall in this region. So the chorionic cavity is the largest, the yolk sac is quite large, the amnion is quite small at this stage. If we zoom in just on that small area, we can see the yolk sac, and here's our embryonic disc in this region, and this is the attachment stalk, or connecting stalk at one end of the disc, connected to the chorion out here. And if we look a little bit later in development, it's much more obvious to see these extra-embryonic spaces. Here is our yolk sac underneath the embryonic disc. Here's the amniotic space on the dorsal side or back side of the embryonic disc. And here's our embryo here. This large black space would be the chorionic space. And we can even see the attachment to the wall in this region. So these are the three extra-embryonic coelomes or cavities. If we cut through the wall of that, you can now quite clearly see section through the embryonic disc, the amniotic space, the yolk sac, and the chorionic space. Here are the developing villi of the placenta, which you'll cover in placentation. I'll stop there, and in 5 minutes I'll come back and we'll go through gastrulation and the notochord together.